Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. I'm sorry for that long pause in there. I almost missed you tonight, folks. I was getting some information for you out of my files. At the time, I looked up and it was about 3 minutes until nine, which happens to me, I'm sorry, way too often. Today is Tuesday, May the 24th, in the year 2005. And before I forget, let me do this. If you want to grab a pen, please. I get calls from many of you asking for Gary Barnes' phone number at the Platinum Edge for the MSM Plus that we talked about. And Gary's coming on with us again, by the way, next Wednesday. Let me give you his phone number for those of you who didn't get it down. Gary's already had calls from people reordering because of results that they're already feeling from the MSM. His phone number is 800-250-3870. 800, write this down. 250-3870. And that's Gary Barnes at the Platinum Edge MSM Plus. And the difference, of course, as we talked about, between MSM and MSM Plus is that the MSM contains all of the essential cell salts that, according to the 10-year patent medical study, must be present in the body for the MSM to actually do its what its effectiveness. Our spiritual message tonight is again from the Course in Miracles, and this is from the workbook, page 64. It is quite possible to listen to God's voice all through the day without interrupting your regular activities in any way. The part of your mind in which truth abides is in constant communication, whether you are aware of it or not. Let me read that again. It is quite possible to listen to God's voice all through the day without interrupting your regular activities in any way. The part of your mind in which truth abides is in constant communication with God, whether you are aware of it or not. And consciously aware of it is what our quest is, isn't it, folks? Being consciously aware, spiritually aware of our oneness with our Creator. What I'm going to do tonight is share with you, and I've got a question here. I don't know if any of you might have an answer to it or not. We're going to talk about the real ID, the national ID card that was passed this month, that whizzed after it went into conference committee, whizzed into the conference committee, and whizzed out of the conference committee and then was signed by the president, probably before, by the time its shadow touched his desk. But they call this the real ID, and it's capital R, capital E, capital A, capital L, all cap letters, real ID. And I've read most of the greatest share of this conference report, and the only thing that I found was one place where they used the word real in their explanation, a real ID, a person's real name, and that was in quotes, real. But what I was trying to find out, and I called Washington, D.C. again today, because it says in this report that when the Real Idea Act becomes effective, and so I called Washington, D.C., and once again talked to the bill status room and asked about a bill called the Real ID Act, and there was one passed, but it only passed the House. I did order a copy of it anyway. What I've noticed in the conference report here is that all of the changes that took place, in the back of the report, they discuss each of the sections and say what it means, but we don't have the actual language to this bill. And we need to get a hold of that. This is, the conference report is supposed to be the finished product. It is not the finished product. My question is this. When our name is spelled in all capital letters, according to people who have studied the law, I'm not talking lawyers, attorneys, but people who have studied the law, say that the name spelled in all capital letters is actually a fiction. It is, it makes us a subject, a thing. And Alan and I were talking earlier today, and he looked it up in the dictionary, the word real, and basically it folks, the word real relates to property, like real estate. So I got Black's Law out, 6th edition. I don't have the 7th. I don't know if there's an 8th edition. But I have Black's Law, 6th edition, and the word real in every case applies to property. And so my wondering is this. I had asked them if the R-E-A-L, given that it's all cap letters, was it an acronym? Is that what it's called? Where each of the letters of the first word spell out another word, like DOT, Department of Transportation, they call it DOT. And the one man that I spoke with said, no, that it just means real, like a real passport, a real ID rather than a fake one. But it isn't an acronym because it doesn't have periods after the letters. And I pointed out to him, using the Department of Transportation as an example, they don't put a D period, O period, T period. They just call it DOT. And they have all of these little. So my wondering was, what does the R, the E, the A, the L stand for? Is it an acronym for four words, or is it simply their way of designating us their subjects, their things, their property? I don't know. If any of you have any thoughts on this, or even know whether or not the real in Real ID Act is an acronym or not, if you would give me a call at 570-537-3035. No, I'm sorry, that's my home phone number. 570-537-3025. And I'll tell you something else. They reference, see, what they're doing is pretending that this whole thing is set up to protect us from terrorists and to keep terrorists out of this country, which is, of course, as we know, the ostensible reason. By the way, if you're interested in getting this report, It is the conference report to accompany H.R. 1268. The report number is 109-72. 109-72. You can get it free. Just call the bill room or bill status. Fact, let's see, 224-3121. Washington, D.C. switchboard. I don't have an 800 number, but the number is 202-224-3121. I'll tell you what I'm going to do on our break. I'll go check out, because I don't have my phone book here, but I'll check it out to make sure that's the right number. You can call the Washington, D.C. switchboard, ask for bill status, and tell them that you want to order a copy of the conference report to accompany H.R. 1268. The report is 109-72, 185 pages. They're only about, I think, about 6x8 format, but it's very small print and very text intensive. But there's enough in here that you would understand that it could get you really bugged. I'm going to go right back to the back of this because I'm going to read to you some of the their explanations of this thing. But what I want to do is I'm going to read to you the references they make to the 911 terrorists here, folks. This is referring to section 202B1. It says many states don't follow the convention of full legal name. For example, a person might, quote, this is in quotes, use a middle name versus his or her first name, and therefore prefer that the driver's license use that name without regard to the, quote, real first name. Instead of William Buford Brown, the state driver's license states simply Bo Brown. Using a name other than a full legal name results in no matches, that's in quotes, when checked against other public records that use the full legal name. Now listen to this. This occurred with some of the licenses and state ID cards obtained by the 911 terrorists, where the driver's license names were variants on the actual name carried in the passport, despite the terrorists' use of their own valid passports to verify a name. Okay, that's one. That's one reference to the terrorists. Here's another one. They're talking about Muhammad Atta. It says, states rarely check the authenticity of green cards or other immigration documents, which is why 9/11 terrorist Muhammad Atta was able to pass a hand-altered immigration document to get a 6-year Florida driver's license, despite holding what was in fact a visa that was about to expire. Muhammad Atta. And then we go to another reference here of 911 terrorists. It says, although the FBI has provided the counts now used about the false identities maintained by the 19 9/11 terrorists, they may, in fact, have had more, as state record systems confirm or deny. Excuse me, as state record systems are sometimes so poor that few source documents are available to confirm or deny. So this is in the section that requires them to keep their source documents up to 7 to 10 years, at least 7 years. In other words, copies of our birth certificates and all of the information that we have to bring them in order to get this federal recognition, real ID card. Here's another one. It's referring to section 202D6. It says it corrects the current security vulnerability of state procedures where a license or ID card issued by another state is replaced with a new license or ID card without confiscating the old card or notifying the other state of the new issuance. Now listen to this. Several of the 9/11 terrorists told the issuing states that they had lost their licenses so that they could have two valid licenses, and then used the duplicate to obtain a license in another state, allowing them to hold multiple licenses from multiple states. Okay, now these are the four references that I found. This is in the back where they're going through all the explanation. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to read to you a not a long article. This is, let's see, what's the date on this? Well, I've got it May 21st, 2003. Okay, this was from the American Free Press, May 13th, 02. FBI admits no evidence. The possibility that 19 Muslim men accused of being the September 11th hijackers were not, in fact, the hijackers, is not so extraordinary an idea as it might seem. This is by Michael Collins Piper. After 7 months of nonstop declarations by U.S. government spokesmen that there exists solid proof tying 19 Muslim men to plotting the September 11 terrorist attacks, FBI Director, I was thinking he was CIA, FBI Director Robert Mueller has now admitted quite the opposite. This was in May 2002, folks. The 19 Muslim men who have apparently disappeared, have been named as the hijackers, is not in doubt. I think it should be is now in doubt. Oh, excuse me. That 19 Muslim men who have apparently disappeared have been named as the hijackers is not in doubt. What is in doubt is whether those 19 men were actually plotting anything, either individually or together. The amazing possibility remains that others carried out the September 11 terrorist attacks using identities of the 19 Muslims who've been assigned guilt in the tragedy. In an April 19th speech, listen to this, delivered to the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, Mueller said that the purported hijackers, in his words, quote, left no paper trail. The FBI director stated flatly, in our investigation, we have not uncovered a single piece of paper, either here in the U.S. or in the treasure trove of information that has turned up in Afghanistan and elsewhere that mentioned any aspect of the September 11th plot. In describing Mueller's evidence fiasco, L.A. Times reporter Eric Lichtblau and Josh Meyer, reporters, whose article was printed in the Washington Post on April 30th, note that, quote, law enforcement officials say that while they've been able to reconstruct the movements of the hijackers before the attacks, all legal except for a few speeding tickets, they have found no evidence of their actual plotting. The Times reporters acknowledge that Mueller's comments offer the FBI's most comprehensive and detailed assessment to date of its investigation remarkable, as much for what investigators have not found as for what they have. The FBI director explained away the absence of evidence by making the disingenuous assertion that the hijackers used meticulous planning, extraordinary secrecy, and extensive knowledge. Mueller made this claim despite the fact that in the immediate wake of the September 11 attacks, a variety of U.S. officials and media sources speciously announced almost instantaneously that there was firm evidence not only that these 19 Muslim men were agents of Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda network, but that they were indeed the individuals who hijacked the doomed flights on September 11th. Mueller seems to forget that early government and media reports loudly hyped discoveries, letters, and other documents in the luggage and personal belongings of the presumed hijackers, which, quote, proved that they were on a mission for Allah, etc. Now, Mueller's comments seem to contradict everything that has been said. Not a trace of evidence, folks. Now, since then, we have found that one of the so-called hijackers was a commercial airline pilot. And there have been others that have come forth who were named as hijackers that are alive and well. And yet this report from Washington, D.C. states in several places the reason for this insidious piece of work. The Real ID Act is to keep terrorists out of the country. Now, I want you to hear something. There's a lot of stuff in here. You know, when I first started reading this report, the first part of it, actually 81 pages of it, is all about the appropriations. Excuse me, it's up to page 72. And the Real ID Act of 2005, preventing terrorists from obtaining relief from removal. That was Division B. I'm getting into it. I want you to hear something, though. This has to do with administrative provisions in Chapter 4, Legislative Branch. These are more appropriations. Payments to widows and heirs of deceased members of Congress. Another heading is salaries and expenses. This next heading is administrative provisions. And it says here that the conference agreement includes an administrative provision related to the deposit of fees. In addition, language is included making a technical correction for the chair of the Committee on Appropriations or his designee of the House of Representatives to be a member of the Joint Committee on the Library. Now listen to this. And the Board of Trustees of the Open World Leadership Program. Open World Leadership Program. Did you ever hear of that one? I hadn't. Title II here. Improved security for driver's licenses and personal identification cards. They are referring to this as federal recognition, folks. I think I mentioned this the other night. I have an overhead light out, and it's making it a little difficult. Let me move a lamp up here further. Ah, that's better. Get a little light on the subject here. My overhead light has one of the bulbs out. And there's a dull spot, a dark spot here. This is Title II, Improved Security for Driver's Licenses and Personal ID Cards. And, of course, they define the term driver's license, meaning a motor vehicle operator's license, as defined in Section 30301 of Title 49, U.S. Code, and then an ID card, the same thing, as defined in Section 1028D of Title 18, U.S. Code, issued by a state. Now listen to this, the official purpose of this act. The term official purpose includes, but is not limited to, accessing federal facilities, boarding federally regulated commercial aircraft, entering nuclear power plants, and listen to this, any other purposes that the secretary shall determine. Secretary, the term secretary means the Secretary of Homeland Security. That is Michael Chertoff, a Russian Jew. And according to Alan today, and I thought I had heard this, that he was a KGB member in Russia, folks. So now he is head of the Homeland Security, and he has, listen to this, he has the authority under this act to make all kinds of changes and any changes he wants. The official purpose is et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and any other purposes that the secretary shall determine, that Michael Chertoff might determine. One man, one foreigner, and very possibly even has dual Israeli citizenship. Minimum document requirements and issuance standards for federal recognition. In the beginning 3 years after the date of the enactment of this division, a federal agency may not accept for any official purpose a driver's license or ID card issued by a state to any person unless the state is meeting the requirements of this section. And the secretary shall determine whether a state is meeting the requirements or not. And as far as the requirements, I don't really see much of anything missing here that they're not doing in this Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. The minimum document requirements, at a minimum. But you must remember that once this baby is in his hands, which it is already, the changes, they'll start making the changes. They want the person's full legal name, date of birth, gender, driver's license or ID card number, a digital photograph of the person, the person's address of principal residence, the signature, and physical security features designed to prevent tampering. That would be the card itself. A common machine-readable technology with defined minimum data elements. The minimum issuance standards in general. To meet the requirements of this section, a state shall require, at a minimum, presentation and verification of the following information before issuing a driver's license or ID card, a photo identity document, except that a non-photo identity document is acceptable if it includes both the person's full legal name and date of birth. B, documentation showing the person's date of birth. C, proof of the person's Social Security account number, or verification that the person isn't eligible for a Social Security account number. So there we go. With the For the People, who wanted to protect their children and say, nope, we're not getting a Social Security number for Junior. We're not putting him into the system. Well, folks, if Junior wants a driver's license, Junior's going to have a Social Security number or he won't, quote, get a driver's license or ID card. We're going to take our break here, and we're going to be back in about a minute and a half. Have your pen handy, if you will, and you'll be able to get my address. This broadcast is listener sponsored, and we are getting very close again, folks, to maybe having to look at the possibility of wrapping this up. It just gets behind very, very quickly. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dough.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Jackie? Hello? Jackie?
I'm sorry, I'm back.
Oh, okay. Thought I lost you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Michael. Folks, I'm sorry. I was trying to fix a shade here, and I didn't have my timing down well enough. I hope you got my address. Let me give it to you once again, just in case you didn't get it. It is 570... No, it is P.O. Box 190... Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. What I was giving this information to you about what they're going to be expecting and requiring from us, we, the people, born and bred here, they're doing it here in this state of Pennsylvania right now in this Commonwealth. And one of the things that they're requiring is proof of your address. I don't know how one would get around it, because when Chuck passed away, everything was in his name, and nothing was in my name. The IRS had been messing with me right after we moved in here. They had been messing with me before we moved in, and I had nothing in my name. And so when Chuck passed over and I was looking into getting a driver's license, I had to bring in two proofs that I lived at this address. I said, well, I've got hundreds of letters here that people have sent me. I do a radio broadcast. No, we can't accept that. We need a bill, like your electric bill, your gas bill, your phone. I said, but I don't have one in my name. It's never been in my name. That was all they were going to accept, folks. So I don't know how a person gets around that, but there will be a Social Security number. Now listen to this. This is what we have to go through. The people that this thing was enacted to protect, okay? Now listen to this. These are for, in general, to meet the requirements of this section, the state shall comply with the minimum standards of this paragraph. evidence of lawful status. A state shall require, before issuing a driver's license or ID card to a person, valid documentary evidence that the person, 1, is a citizen or national of the U.S., 2, is an alien lawfully admitted for permanent or temporary residence, 3, has conditional permanent resident status in the U.S., 4, has an approved application for asylum. Excuse me, listen to this again. Has approved application for asylum in the U.S. or has entered into the U.S. in refugee status. Do you think they're bringing their birth certificate, their ID numbers? What do you think these people have to show, folks? A refugee from another country? Number 5 here, has a valid unexpired non-immigrant visa or non-immigrant visa status for entry into the U.S. Listen to this one. Has a pending application for asylum. They can get a driver's license. They have a pending application. An alien, a foreign alien. And I guess that's what an alien is, right? But if they have a pending application for asylum, so they come over here on a boat and they're looking for asylum, so they make an application for asylum and the state can give them a driver's license. Or 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, has a pending or approved application for temporary protected status in the U.S. They can all get their licenses and their ID cards or ID cards, or has approved deferred action status, or has a pending application for adjustment of status to that of an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence. So they'll be given temporary licenses, and theirs will have an expiration on it. The ones that they're requiring here for federal recognition can be up to a period of 8 years before they're renewed. That's those of us who have to jump through hoops to get it. But these other people, the other status, that have other status, show an application that you've applied for asylum. Or if they show a visa from another country. Now, one of the things I was looking for when I was late getting on was the fact that I have read articles about the fact that in Mexico, all of their documents are a dime a dozen. They come over here with fictitious documents and they'll show them, including a fictitious passport, and they'll get one, folks. But not you or me. All right, now I'm going to go to the back of this thing. This is a highlight I made. This is one of the headings. Section 416 of the American Competitive and Workforce Improvement Act. What the heck does that mean? American Competitiveness and Workforce Improvement Act of 1998. And they go into quite a bit here on administrative procedures, the Administrative Procedure Act. And I'll tell you another thing, all of the appropriations that they made here were just outrageous. And the Department of Defense, the Secretary of Defense has total control of it, of all these billions, $82 billion. for all kinds of things, even giving money to the Afghani and the Iraqi, quote, governments for anti-drug activities. But it talks about control, drug control, which means when you think about it, you think about the language they use, their control. It's like securing Iraq, securing their borders. They talk about securing the borders of Iraq and homeland security. What are they securing, folks? What is the word secure? To secure, it means to keep, to hold. Homeland security. We've got time for calls if you want to call up. It's if you want to call in, the number is 570-537-3025. Title I, this is from the conference report, Amendments to Federal Laws to Protect Against Terrorist Entry. And as I said, this isn't giving us the language of the bill. They're going through each of the sections, and they're explaining what each of those sections says. It says here, aliens who pose a danger to the national security of the U.S. have been barred from receiving asylum and withholding of removal by regulation since 1990. In 1996, Congress amended the Immigration and Nationality Act, the INA, to explicitly bar aliens who are inadmissible or deportable under terrorism provisions from receiving asylum and withholding. Despite these bars to dangerous aliens receiving asylum, however, the 9/11 terrorist travel monograph notes that a number, quote, a number of terrorists have abused the asylum system. Monograph at page 106. For example, Ramzi Youssef and Ahmad Ajar, plotters of the first World Trade Center bombing, quote, concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived to remain in the United States in 1992. I want to remind you, if you knew, and to tell you in case you didn't know, that the San Francisco Chronicle and the New York Times both carried two-page articles on the first World Trade Center bombing, the attempted bombing, and he was of Arab descent, I believe, of some type. I don't know what his nationality was. He didn't trust the FBI because they said that they were trying to hook somebody. But anyway, that they were going to make a bomb, but it wasn't going to be a real bomb. It was just going to have powder in it. And the one man wired himself, one of the people that they had helping them, he was wired for sound. And he tape recorded all their conversations. And he knew that it was a real bomb that was being planted. And he talked to the FBI agent. And he said, you can't do this. It's a real bomb. And they told him to be quiet. And the whole thing came out in the papers, folks. So they weren't Arab terrorists. It was the FBI. That pulled off that first one. But they're talking here about the Ramzi Youssef and Ahmad Ajaz, whatever, plotters of the first World Trade Center bombing. So there's lies all the way through this thing. Maybe if you don't want to call in, I'll I'll just read some of my highlights to you, okay? In section 101, it says it resolves conflicts between administrative and judicial tribunals with respect to standards to be followed in assessing asylum claims. In addition, it makes similar amendments to the standards governing other forms of relief from removal. Finally, this section corrects references within the asylum provisions to reflect changes in the INA generally. Division B, subsection 101, would amend paragraph 208, B1 of the INA, to clarify that the Secretary of Homeland Security and the Attorney General both have authority to grant asylum. Down here, paragraph 101 of Division B would provide that the references to the authority of the Secretary of Homeland Security will take effect, listen, as if enacted on March 1st, 2003, which was the official date of transfer of immigration enforcement functions from the INS to the Department of Homeland Security. So they're predating his authority under this act. The INA requires all aliens seeking asylum to establish that they suffered or fear persecution, quote, on account of one of five factors: race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. As the Supreme Court has held, since the statute makes motive critical, an asylum applicant must provide some evidence of it, direct or circumstantial. So they can come and say anything they want, and an administrative law judge is going to set and decide. It says down here, this is also highlighted, the BIA trying to see what the BIA is. I don't think I highlighted that. The BIA has explained the alien's burden as follows. An asylum applicant, quote, bears the burden of establishing facts on which a reasonable person would fear that the danger arises on account of one of the five protected factors. And those factors, once again, race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. Now, I'm jumping across to another page. They're talking about Federal Regulation 76588, etc. It says, because this standard has not yet been adopted, there is currently no uniform standard for assessing motivation. This statutory standard is, however, in keeping with decisions of reviewing courts, and it gives some of the cases. Affirming BIA's finding of no persecution on account of qualifying ground, because in mixed motive cases, quote, applicant must present evidence sufficient for one to reasonably believe that the harm suffered was motivated in meaningful part by a protected ground. And they went on to say here that this administrator's that because of his experience, that he can sit and listen to what this person seeking asylum says, and that he watches the person's body language and listens to the sound of his voice, and he, and only he, one person, makes a decision as to whether the person is telling the truth or not. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Don Armstrong.
Hey, Don.
Well, when your name is all in capital letters, from what I can understand, that's a corporation name.
Yes, it's a fictitious.
and they call
or
it
a fiction
plume or something.
Uh-huh.
That's the only way that they can do anything. And also, with this real ID stuff,
yep.
We got it with our birth certificates now and stuff a while ago, and this is the truth. I've lived in Chatham all my life, only three places. And one day I had somebody from up there say that I did not exist.
Why?
And I had a green birth certificate and one issued a plastic one in 1960. And anyway, apparently I got a little bit mad, or shall I say unhappy. Anyway, they went back and checked, evidently, and have never bothered me again.
Hmm.
Somebody was trying to do something and has got caught.
They were trying to make you non-existent, Don.
Well, I know of three Don Armstrongs born at the same time as me.
Mm.
And one time I was social insurance number, I got this. I had a wife and three children and owed them $3,000, our revenue guy.
So in other words, they had you confused with
Don Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
Or somebody trying to take it.
Same birth date and everything?
Well, he was trying to say that, but they never gave me any proof. But evidently, whatever it was, I stopped them cold in their tracks. They thought they'd find an easy patsy.
Uh-huh.
If they were looking for information to make another person up or something, well, they got stopped cold.
Yep. Well, good. I'm glad you got that squared away.
But that's to do with the real ID. But any ID can be copied. Doesn't matter what it is. And I've heard recently this eye stuff, it can be copied in face recognition. It can be
You know what?
Messed up.
I had a person tell me very recently that they had a whole stack of birth certificates, legal birth certificates, blank.
Yep.
To fill in.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I've heard of it in Toronto. There is whole, they call them males or something, or groups of people.
Well, you know what we're doing right here? We're giving them all the reasons. They're saying, see, that's why we have to do what we're doing.
Also.
But, Don, listen to me. The whole point is that these aliens are going to be able to get there, but their card will be clearly marked that it is temporary. It will expire in a year and have to be renewed if they're still here.
Yeah, but here is what I heard tonight on TV. In Homeland Security, hundreds of people have social security numbers that are not valid. I never saw the rest of the story so far.
You were just hear that?
On TV.
Yeah.
It came across. And the head of your Homeland Security, he was the head of the KGB in Russia.
He was head of the KGB?
Yes.
I wonder if he has a dual Israeli U.S. Citizenship.
I would...
Wouldn't be surprised.
Let's put it this way. If I had $100, I think I'd have your $100 to go with it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't bet you, darling.
No, but I'm just saying.
Thank you. Yeah, Don. Okay.
I just thought I'd tell you what.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know if there is what if REAL is an anacronym.
Yeah, I know what
the
mean.
Heck
this
it
means
stands.
A whole lot of words.
Well, I know, but I'd like to know what the REAL stands for, or is it just their little joke on us by putting it all in cap letters, establishing us. Fully establishing us as federal property, because this is exactly what it's going to do.
I think that's what this actually does.
Very possible. I called talked to Sensenbrenner's office. He was the one that introduced the Real ID Act, And I talked to the man there, and he said, no, it just means real rather than fake. I said, I don't think so. Well, let me check with my chief of staff. And he came back, and he said, nope, it doesn't mean anything. It just means it's a real ID.
Well, I would bet to say it means something else again.
We're out of time almost here, babe.
But just something that...
Yes, and Don, thank you. And thank you for your continuous support of Sweet Liberty, honey.
A little donation here for you today.
You always do. Thank you, Don.
I was going to get a mail to you after I got home, but the rain decided
That's okay.
To...
I just wanted to take this time to say thank you.
Right.
Okay, darling. Bye-bye.
I'll keep my ears open and see if I can find out.
Yeah, see what you can find out, Don.
Right.
Okay, bye-bye. Listen to this, folks, about the Social Security numbers. Let's see. I have this circled. Although the FBI has provided the counts now used, they were talking about the 911 terrorists, the goal is to move all of state's records into electronic format, with each state consolidating electronic records otherwise maintained at county level at the state level. The cost is much lower than the paper filing system still maintained by some states. The initial capital cost for the state is not insignificant, but the incremental savings are great. Although this act will require licenses be reissued after every 8 years, states will need to have original document records to discern whether the birth certificate was valid that was originally presented when the prior license was issued. The Social Security Administration is pursuing, listen to this, a birth certificate records system with the states that is beginning to have an effect in a few pilot states, which program will be further accelerated by the program put into the law through the Intelligence Reform Act that will reduce the state's need to retain a separate record of document images or paper records. And what they're doing is checking. What they're doing is making a database so they can see if there are any duplicate Social Security numbers. Folks, the way I see this is a wrap-up. And if we think that there is any way that we could ever get lost in this system again, once this doggone thing is fully effective, so something's got to give between now and then, doesn't it? Whatever that is, we'll see you back again tomorrow night. Thanks for being here, folks. God bless you. Have a lovely evening. And have sweet dreams tonight. Good night. Yeah, sweet dreams, yes? After death. Good night, folks.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.